is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hi, this is Don Showalter from USA Basketball, and you are listening to the Hoop Heads Podcast.
Hey, Hoop Heads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150-plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Linsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. Tonight we are jumping on to record our weekly NBA pod. And although there are no games, there are a few things that we're going to be able to talk about tonight. But before we do that, we wanted to share a couple of news items here as we head into this period of basketball inactivity. First thing we wanted to talk about is my appearance yesterday on the virtual coaches clinic. And I want to say thanks to Lee Allen Klein and Lacen Perkins and CoachTube for putting that together. If you missed it, I went on and spoke about how to run a quality youth program. I've been getting a lot of good feedback from that. So if you get an opportunity to search that up and find it, you can find it on Twitter just by searching hashtag virtual coaches clinic, and all that will come up. It's been just a tremendous resource for coaches out there. There's been over 200 guests all the way from the NBA to guys that work at the youth level. It's been phenomenal.
Billy Diamond's talking tomorrow, Mike.
Yeah, I've watched a ton of those, and I think if you're not watching them, you're missing out. I know a lot of guys have said, for people say, I had so many plans to get things done during this time, and the coaches clinic is interrupting what I was trying to get done. So shout out to the virtual coaches clinic. It's been fantastic, and I'm just thankful that I had an opportunity to go on, and hopefully people found some value in it. And if you didn't get a chance to see it, go check it out. And then the second thing that we want to talk about is we are in the process of putting together what we hope is going to be a network of basketball podcasts. And so we are in the process right now of looking for ideas, potential hosts for the podcast that we hope to put underneath our umbrella. So if you're a coach out there, or you are someone who's been listening to our podcast and you have an idea for a pod, or you always thought it would be a lot of fun to host one, we're looking for you. So please reach out to us. You can send me an email directly at mike@hoopheadspod.com, or you can send us a direct message on Twitter, which is at hoopheadspod. Either way, we'll get the message. We have a contact form on our website. Just look on the tab at the top that says careers. Send us your information, and we would love to connect with people who are looking to contribute to helping the game of basketball grow, which is really what we're all about, what we really hope this podcast network is going to be all about. So hopefully we'll hear from a few of you out there. If you have any interest, please reach out to us. And then Jason, I know one of the things that we've been asking for over the course of time is for people who are listening and are finding value in our podcast to write some reviews. So we want to shout out a review that was given to us on March 18th.
Yeah, so this review comes from Pick5Cannon. They gave us 5 stars, and they wrote, "Wide variety of guests throughout the basketball industry. Really appreciate that you guys interview quality high school coaches throughout the country." So thanks for the shout-out, Pick5Cannon. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, let's jump from our news items, let's go into the basketball news of the day. Well, actually, you know what? Before we do that, let's just give a quick update, Jay. How's things going at your house here?
As we're all well, everything's going pretty good. I kind of feel like I have a routine going on, which is good. The kids, the routine's going well with them, and you know, I'm, you know, entering week three of teaching from home, and we're kind of getting to that phase where all of our activities that we planned prior to knowing how long this would be are done, and we're starting to plan direct instruction lessons next week. So I've been pumping out some videos, getting ready for next week, and you know, just lots of that stuff going on, grading papers from home and grading things from home, and haven't shaved my beard. I know I stopped by your house without going in. We maintain social distancing. I don't know if you saw the beard that I got going on right now, but we'll see how long that goes and see how long I grow it. I don't know if I'm going to grow it the whole quarantine, because by then I would look like probably, I don't even know, a woolly mammoth of some sort. So, but yeah, everything's going pretty good. How's everything at your place?
Good. I had a beard going for, I don't know, the first 2 weeks, I guess. And then eventually I had to get rid of my mind gets to a certain point and I got to get rid of it. And I just can't take it anymore. So my beard is gone as of yesterday. Plus I wanted to look presentable for the virtual coaches clinic as well. So that was part of the deal there.
I think the real test should be growing your hair out. Like, you should grow it out.
Hey, talk to my family. They all want me to grow it out. I'm like, you guys don't understand. There is very little hair up there on the top, so it's not going to look very good when it grows out. My new nickname would have to be Patchy, I think.
Patchy? Patch Adams.
Patchy. At any rate, things are going great here. Obviously, it's a little bit different in that my family and I are not running around to practices and basketball events and those kinds of things. So from that standpoint, we miss it. However, at the same time, I feel like it has allowed me to certainly slow the pace of life down. It's been nice to spend a lot of time with the family. It's also nice to be able to have time to work on podcast stuff. It's nice to have time to work on basketball things. It was great to be able to prepare for the virtual coaches clinic. It's great to be able to get a little bit more sleep than what I'm used to. So honestly, my wife today told me, she said, boy, it seems like this is going really well. You're just walking around the house with a smile on your face all the time. So I think that definitely has been something that I've enjoyed. I've enjoyed being at home. I've enjoyed having the extra time to be able to work on the things that I continue to be passionate about. It's been a lot of fun to spend more time with my kids. Like I said, we've all missed being out on the court basketball-wise. But it's been, I would say overall, it's been a positive for me. I'm getting more time to exercise, get more time to sleep, get more time to work on the basketball stuff. And all those I would consider to be huge, huge positives for me. So I'm smiling despite the fact that, as we know, the situation continues to be very, very serious throughout the country. And I hope that people, just like you and I are, hopefully people are taking it seriously and starting to see that we all do need to keep our distance. We all do need to stay locked down as much as we possibly can so that we can flatten the curve of this thing and make sure that our hospitals don't continue to be overwhelmed. We don't want to get into a situation where it seems like New York City, if they're not already there, they're very, very close, where they just can't treat enough. They don't have enough beds to be able to treat patients. I know they brought in the naval ship that's docked in the New York Harbor to be able to help with that. And the situation continues to be very, very serious. And I think it appears that it's getting, I don't know if worse is the right word, but it certainly is continuing to grow in terms of the number of cases. And so we hope and wish that everybody out there in the basketball community and in the world in general are staying safe, staying healthy, and just able to, again, be locked in with their family. And you and I are fortunate, we talked about it before, that we both are teachers. So we both are, at this point, continuing to be paid our salary and doing some online teaching and instruction, and we're hopeful that at some point before the school year is out that we'll be able to get back. But I don't know. With the extension out to May 1st, and then things are going to be reevaluated. I think that it's debatable whether we're going to get back this year, and obviously that impacts a lot of the things that we talk about here in terms of sports and the NBA and when they're going to be able to be back. And so we hope that this passes. We hope that we're able to get through it maybe faster than we think. But right now I'd say it's dicey whether that's going to happen.
Yep. All right. I know you mentioned, Mike, that there was no basketball coming anytime soon. However, did you hear the news, Mike? They're having an NBA 2K player tournament this weekend. And
I did.
It's going to be broadcast on ESPN.
That's fantastic. I can't wait to tune in.
Yeah, some good stuff going on here. Here's some people that are participating, and they actually didn't get all a bunch of schlubs, Mike. They got Durant, you got Trae Young, you got Harrison Barnes, Patrick Beverley, Whiteside, Donovan Mitchell, Rory Hachimura, Boogie, Drummond, Devin Booker, Michael Porter Jr., Zach LaVine, Montrezl Harrell, Arvydas Sabonis, and DeAndre Ayton. So not a terrible list there. I mean, it's not like just a bunch of schlubs. So,
well, hey, I will say that at least we know now the guys who are spending how they're spending their free time. These are the guys who really think they've got it going on in the video game arena. So maybe if the NBA ends up canceling and shutting down for longer than we think, maybe they can jump onto their franchise's esports team and start playing.
I would be lying if I said I wasn't going to check at least part of it out. I mean, I think it would be interesting to watch them play. I don't know.
Good for you. It would not be interesting to me in one iota. But
how about with this? Will this be interesting to you on April 19th when the Michael Jordan documentary comes out?
All right. So my kids are making fun of me because my daughter's birthday, my oldest daughter's birthday, is April 19th. And so I ended up, we were talking about it somehow tonight and what we're going to do, because clearly we're going to be locked down still at that point. And I said, oh, for some reason, I think that the date for the Michael Jordan doc is going to be that, you know, the debut is going to be that night. And she's like, oh, and she's not really, she loves basketball, but not necessarily Jordan, because she clearly wasn't alive when he was around. So it's not like she's super excited about that. But I went and double checked the date, and I'm like, yeah, it's going to be on it. You know, episode one debuts at 9, and the other one, episode two, debuts at 10. And I said, that's going to be awesome. And they just looked at me and they all started laughing at me. So it's going to be fantastic.
We've got podcasts. We're going to have some podcasts. We're not going to talk NBA. We're just going to review the episodes and talk about the episodes, Mike. That's what I think we should do starting April 21st. That's what I think.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely going to be some reaction to those episodes without question. I'm looking forward to that tremendously. I think it's going to be super interesting, both from, you think about the interviews and the people that they're going to have on, that they're going to talk to, and then the behind the scenes footage. And I'm just curious to see how the whole story gets put together. Cause watching it live and watching it in real time, you think back and now it's been more than 20 years ago that season went on. And so it'll be interesting to go back and sort of review the memories in your mind and think about what you remember from that time and then compare it to what you see in the doc. It's going to be just, like I said, fantastic. Can't wait for it.
Yeah.
I think
I can't wait either because, I mean, I'll be honest with you, probably his last year in Chicago is really my most vivid memories of Jordan because I was 10 or 11 at the time. So like, I don't really remember much before that. Like, I remember Space Jam. I remember the movie Space Jam, obviously, but I don't really remember him playing before then. I mean, I know he's great, and I've seen clips and highlights, but I'll definitely be interested as I watch it to see what I remember from that season because, I mean, I remember a lot of his washed-up Wizards playing, and, I mean, he still was playing solid basketball as the Wizards, but it wasn't the same. And it'll be nice to relive his last year in Chicago and see what it's like. I would assume, I know that the primary focus is going to be that last season, but would you assume that the first episode is going to be kind of recapping everything up to that point? Or do you think it's going to be just his last season, Mike?
I got to believe there's going to be some Carolina stuff in there, sort of the rise of Michael Jordan. I know, remember when we talked to the guys from Five Star and they mentioned that the one photo of Michael Jordan in the hallway with Pete Gillen during a rainy day at Five Star, that they were licensing that, I believe, to the documentary. So I got to believe that there's going to be some historical part of it where in the beginning they're going to go back to sort of following his childhood up through his time at North Carolina and then getting into the NBA for the first time.
Okay. How many episodes until they show the shot, Mike?
I would say you're getting into, let's see, that was 89. So you're talking about he came out in 85, right? No.
Do you think it's going to be in the first night? Will the shot be present in the first night of the documentary? I would assume so, right?
Are you talking about the North Carolina shot or the shot against the Cavs?
Oh, game against the Cavs. Come on.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised
if that's in the opening intro, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, it could be in an opening montage, but I don't know if the story of the shot is necessarily in episode one. I guess it depends on how, I mean, it's a 10 part doc. So figuring it's 10 hours. I guess it just depends on how quickly they move through the beginning part of his career and how much the entire doc focuses just on that one last season and, you know, the playoffs and that kind of thing. So,
and I want to say this, Mike, shame on ESPN. They're stretching this out for 5 weeks. You got all these people in quarantine. You're telling me that if they didn't just run one episode for every night for 10 nights, they could own 10 straight nights of ratings. They could sell commercial coverage because, you know, millions of people are going to be watching these episodes. So
I think that doesn't it give them a chance though to replay it multiple times in between the next original airing? Well, I mean, I know people don't have places to be and things to do the way they did before, so it would be a lot different, but I still think because people's viewing habits are so different now, in that people know that they don't have to tune in at a certain time in order to be able to see something. But, so I think there's going to be a lot of people who are like, okay, I know it's on. I have it DVR'd. I can watch it whenever I want to watch it. And so I could see where, yeah, if they released it every night for 10 straight nights, that it would get huge ratings. But I could also see the counterpoint to that, which is we air it a couple nights in a row. You know, we're going to air episode one and episode two the same night. Then we wait 3, 4, 5 days, whatever it is. I don't know. Is it a week or how long?
It's a week. It's every Sunday.
Okay.
It's ridiculous.
All right. So, but in between, they're going to replay it a couple times and people are going to have a DVR and they're going to watch it. So I think the ratings for it are going to be huge. People are going to be dying to have any kind of new content to watch. It's kind of like all these historical games have been airing on NBA TV. I've been kind of tuning in and checking out, not entire games, but watching 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there. It's been kind of interesting just to see, again, the style of play and how different it is and the number of guys that are down on the block posting up and people that are out on the perimeter and nobody's outside the three-point line and the spacing. And just it's just a totally different game than what we see today. But the doc is going to be awesome. That's all I can say.
I'm pumped. And I can't wait.
Can't wait for it.
So in a few weeks, we'll be reviewing episodes starting with – That'll be our new job. Might be a new podcast, reviewing sports movies. There you go. There's an idea for all of you out there. All right.
That's it.
All right. So the next topic of our many topics tonight, the next topic is the Chinese Basketball Association had planned to start this week. And today it was announced that the season had been delayed. And then there was an article written, I don't know if it was Woj or someone, about how American sports teams are going to use this to their knowledge to not try to get things started sooner than they should. Because obviously China's not in a place, even though they've kind of got it, supposedly have it all kind of calmed down over there. And they were looking to start, but now they're delaying again. So I think this is just going to cause NBA, MLB, PGA, all the sports teams, sports organizations in the country to take precautionary measures to not try to just make it happen and rush it back sooner rather than later.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things here. One is I was reading some reports in various places today that people are very distrustful of the numbers that were coming out of China in terms of the number of illnesses and the number of deaths, especially the longer this thing goes and what we've seen happening in New York City and in the United States. People tend to think that China has vastly underestimated or underreported the number of cases that were actually there in China. Now, I don't know what's the truth or what's not the truth, but I think there's certainly potential based on what we know about the Chinese government that could be the case. So there's that. Then number two, I think everything that I've read is that once we're all social distancing and we stay out and we see the curve start to go down, the danger is that we relax those parameters and everybody goes back out to their normal life, and then you get this second wave of the virus come in. And I read, actually it was an article in National Geographic, or it was an email that I got sent from National Geographic, and it talked about the 1918 flu pandemic. And it was just comparing and contrasting the cities that did really well and didn't have very many cases and the cities that did poorly. And one of the cities that they talked about was St. Louis. And they said that St. Louis initially had one of the lowest rates of people getting that flu in the entire country, because as soon as they started to see what was happening, they immediately shut everything down, had everybody stay in their homes, basically did what we're doing now, but they did it very, very early compared to a lot of other places. But then as it seemed like the flu was going away, they ended up relaxing those regulations, and then they ended up having a really big number of cases after the fact that ended up surpassing a lot of the other cities who didn't do a good job initially. And so the point of the article was is that it's going to be a long time until we're completely out of the woods, and we have to make sure that we don't spend 2 months in this sheltering in place, and then 2 months from now we say, okay, we're all set to go, and meanwhile the virus is still out there, and now we have all these people interacting, especially people who are asymptomatic and we don't even know that they have it, and we're interacting with people, and then we get this big second bounce, and now do we shut everything, do we bring everything back and then have to shut it down again? And I think that's what everybody's trying to avoid. I think that's probably the case of what happened in China. They started looking around and going, man, if we open this thing back up, we could just create a whole nother bounce in the number of cases. So I think it's definitely going to be something that hopefully we'll learn from here in the United States. I think the NBA is going to be very cautious. And I think, to be honest, I think everybody is going to have to be really cautious, because it's just, if you come back out of it and then it happens again, I don't know how receptive people are going to be to, hey, I'm going to stay inside for another, I just spent 2 months or 2.5 months or 3 months or whatever it's going to take here, and now we're all back to quote normal, and then we see this second wave of the illness kick in. That's going to be really tough to be able to enforce and get people to understand how serious it is. So I hope we just bite whatever bullet we need to and stay out as long as we have to in order to get this thing where we can go back fully and not have to be worried about it, if that's even possible. I mean, who knows?
I agree. I think it's definitely, I think if the best case scenario at this point, Mike, in my opinion, and I'm not an expert, I think if they were to start Major League Baseball and the NBA July 1, I think they'd probably be happy, to be honest with you. I think that's a realistic possibility. I don't think starting it before then is realistic at all. I think July 1 is the day. But I don't know, that's when you get into the discussion of, for the NBA at least, when's it worth it? At what point are we just going to punt on the season? I don't know they definitely have contingency plans in place, and they want to do whatever they can to avoid having to punt on the season. I know they do, because that's a lot of money that they're losing and players are losing, which it was announced tonight that they're starting to talk about players losing money, like up to 25% of their salary, depending on how things shake out. And obviously it's going to have to happen if they don't play the game. So I think, I don't know what your opinion on a drop dead date is, but I think July 1 would have to be close to that date, right, Mike?
You would think at some point it just gets, we talked about this before, it just gets ridiculous in terms of, it's not even the same season anymore. If you don't play, if you haven't played since March, so you're going to sit out until July 1. So you're basically having 3.5 months off before you come back. And then
you might as well just start the next season early or something, you know?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what you do. I think regardless of what it is, obviously it's a weird circumstance. It's the same things that we've all talked about all throughout, whether it's our jobs with teaching or whatever. In a lot of ways, this time is just, it's a write-off for everybody, because the NBA doesn't want to have a season. They don't want to have the 2019-2020 season in history with no champion having been declared. They just don't want to do that. So I get it. I just think that it's going to be a real, real challenge to be able to figure out, how do we get these games back playing. I don't know if you're going to be able to play them with fans. If you're not playing them with fans, that still means that every single person has to be tested prior to putting everybody back on the floor. And not only do you have players, but you have coaches, you have trainers, you have, there's certain personnel that are going to have to be in those arenas in order to be able to pull off the games. And in so doing, every one of those people has to be tested. And if one or two or 10 or who knows, I mean, we don't know where this thing is going to be at that time. And what's the cutoff for the number of people that can have it before you start saying, well, we just can't, we can't continue to play. And that's all, I mean, you hope that NBA players are all observing the lockdown and staying in place where they are, but who knows? And
yep,
they, I mean, maybe they could have people go to the grocery store for them, but maybe they go themselves and maybe there's somebody else there that touched a jar of peanut butter and then they grab that jar of, you know, we just don't know. And so I think that there's a challenge there that none of us really understand yet what the return to normalcy is going to look like and how we're going to get there. I have no idea what that's going to look like, both on a societal scale and on an NBA scale. And the timeline for that, I think it's, you might as well just throw darts at the wall. I don't think anybody has any idea really what's going to happen.
I agree. All right. Anything else on that, Mike?
No, I don't think we know enough to be able to, again, we're just speculating on the whole thing, and we can continue to talk about it each time as each week as more information comes out and more contingency plans get put in place. And but the reality is nobody knows. Not even the experts really have a firm grasp on how we're going to have this thing under control until we have a vaccine.
Coaches, we've teamed up with Coach Tyler Whitcomb so you can now purchase his exclusive new playbooks right from the Hoopheads Pod website. If you're looking for ways to improve your team next season, these playbooks blend affordability with the quality content that serious coaches are looking for. Just visit hoopheadspod.com/store and you'll find playbooks from John Calipari of Kentucky, Leonard Hamilton from Florida State, and Mike Young of Virginia Tech. Check out these great resources at hoopheadspod.com/store.
Okay, so we're moving to the fun portion of our podcast, Mike. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Excited.
Okay, so Mike and I were kind of talking about some things that we could discuss. So we're going to talk about two things. We've ranked our top five players all time to watch play basketball. And then we've also going to talk about our top five sporting events we've ever attended or been a part of in some way, shape, or form. So, Mike, which would you prefer to do first?
Let's do the top five that we like to watch. Let's do okay. That first. I'll let you go first and kick it off.
Okay,
go
so ahead. So we have to talk a little bit here before this. Obviously, I'm 33 years old, so my scope of watching basketball and like I wanted to go with in the moment I wanted to watch them. So I want to be clear here. I don't have a lot of old school players on this list, Mike. I'm just saying that now because. Okay. I don't have a good gauge as to what they played. Like I can pull up YouTube stuff but I don't feel like that was the same thing. And the first person on my list is going to shock you, Mike, because this is just someone that, so he's my number five. He's
all
just
right,
someone that
before,
no matter
before,
what.
Before you reveal.
Yes.
So of your five, how many of them would you consider to be superstars or stars and how many
four.
Guys are just kind of four?
Four.
Okay. So this first guy is your obscure guy.
He's obscure. He's a name you probably never would have thought we would say on our podcast. Okay. The date was December 18th, 2008. I had to look up the date, but I knew the game that stuck in my head. It was a TNT game. I just couldn't remember the date. This guy scored 52 points. His name's Brandon Roy.
All
every
right.
single
Brandon
time
Roy.
His the Portland Trailblazers played on national TV, and it wasn't as easily accessible, I would not miss a game after that game. Like, I watched him play. It was against Phoenix, if I remember correctly. He dominated. 52 points in the game. I instantly just fell in love with watching him play basketball. His shot was just amazing. And I really, really, really think, you know, we talk a lot. They talk a lot about players whose careers were truly hampered by injury. I think he could have been a Hall of Fame player if he didn't get injured. I truly, truly, truly believe that. And I loved watching him play basketball just because his shot was so pure and fantastic. Like, I think he was like a Ray. He was almost like a Ray Allen, but he was better. I felt like if his career would have been, he was a better player. I don't want to say he was a better shooter than Ray Allen, but I think that he would have been a better player than Ray Allen if he wouldn't have gotten hurt. So Brandon Roy is my number five, Mike. There you go.
That's fair. Brandon Roy is probably one of the lost careers in the NBA. I don't think there's any question about that, that he could have been really, really special. 2008, 2009, I just pulled up his stats. He averaged 22 points a game.
And I think in that season, Mike, he only had three games in single digits, if I remember correctly. 2009.
Played 78 games. Then the next year, 2009, 2010, he played 65 games, averaged 21.5. And the next year is when he started getting hurt, played 47 games, only averaged 12. 2011, 2012, he didn't play at all, came back out of retirement to play five games for the Timberwolves in 2012.
5.8 points a game.
And right. 2012, 2013, then he was done. I mean, he definitely had some electric moments. He's a guy that I think, had he been able to stay healthy, definitely was on an upward trajectory and would have been a great player in the league for a long time. Just sort of adds to the misery that the Portland franchise has suffered over the course of time.
And if I remember correctly, Mike, that was going on at the same time that the Oden thing was going on, correct? Like, didn't Oden get drafted just around that same time?
Yeah, so Oden was drafted in, let's see. Man, what year did there? So he came in the same year as Durant. So I think he came in right around, I mean, it was right around that time, 2006, 2007, somewhere in there.
So all that happened at the same time. So I just loved watching him play. And I know I always feel like deprived of the fact that I didn't get to watch him play more basketball. And so that's why I put him at number five, Mike. I know he's kind of an oddball choice, but I just loved watching him play. So
that's a good call. That's a very good call. All right. So I'll start with my oddball. I'll start with my oddball choices. I went with two for sure oddball choices. And I've got some other names and different things that I have in front of me. But my first choice, well, not my first choice, but on my list, and I didn't really rank them in terms of order.
Oh, I ranked them, sorry.
Okay, but I had on my list was from the early 80s Philadelphia 76ers, Andrew Toney. Who you may not even,
I don't even know who that is.
You may not even know who Andrew Toney is. But Andrew Toney was a guy who, he was number 22. And that was why I always wanted to be number 22 because I loved Andrew Toney. And he was just on that team in the early 80s with the Sixers. You had Mo Cheeks and Bobby Jones and Daryl Dawkins. And then eventually Moses Malone. And of course you had Doc. And then you had Andrew Toney. And so I always... For some reason, Andrew Toney was just a guy who he would heat up. He'd come in off the bench most of the time, and he was just a scorer, a shooter, and I just loved watching him play. He just could score from anywhere. He's primarily a jump shooter, not necessarily a guy who went to the basket, but he was just somebody who I just loved watching. And I love those Sixers teams. Doc was my guy, just like you talked about Jordan, being able to see him only later in his career. So Doc I remember vaguely the 77 finals that it was on like late at night on tape delay. And I remember catching like some highlights on like the local news station of Dr. J and some of his crazy dunks from that series you still see all the time. But that, despite the fact that Doc was my favorite guy, Andrew Toney was a guy that I loved. And I'm looking at his career stats here. And Andrew Toney had... In 82-83, which was the year that the Sixers won the title, Andrew Toney averaged 19 a game. Then the following year, 83-84, he averaged 20. And 84-85, he averaged 17. So he had like a four-year stretch from 1981 to 1985 where he probably averaged, I don't know, 18, 19 points a game. And he was just a guy who was electric with the ball. He could score. He could shoot it. And so when I think back to my time, I always loved watching Andrew Toney play. So I got one up on the obscurity factor because at least
you do.
At least I heard of Brandon Roy.
Yeah. True.
Got to go watch some Andrew. Got to watch some Andrew Toney highlights.
Now, ironically, my next two played in that same game, Mike, as Brandon Roy.
Okay.
52 pointer. Okay. My number four is Steve Nash, and here's why. I just loved watching him move the ball up the floor, and he's just so smooth. And that goes. He goes back to. I wouldn't say that he's someone whose career was severely shortened by injury, but I definitely think he could have played a few more years if he hadn't had a bad back. And, you know, we could look back at that year that Dwight, Kobe, and Steve Nash, the, you know, that infamous Sports Illustrated cover, and then it flamed out because of all the injuries and stuff. But I just loved watching Steve Nash play. And, I mean, he did win the MVP twice in a row, although I think LeBron deserved one of them. But we're not going to get into that discussion. But I just truly loved watching him play. And, you know, where his game would be in today's NBA, I think he would be even far better than he was then, because I think his game would fit this NBA currently very, very well.
Well, he would shoot more. I think that's the one thing that I've heard a couple of interviews with him in the last year or two. And one of the things that he always talks about is the fact that if he had to go back and replay his career, he would just simply shoot more. He was such a good shooter from three-point land. He was a guy who could control every aspect of the game. And you look at his shooting statistics from a percentage standpoint, he was always right up there near the top of the league. And yet, if you looked at what his attempts were from three during his career, he certainly, if he was in today's game, would have shot the ball more. And he always talks about how those 7 seconds or less Suns, they never could quite get over the hump, A, to make the finals, but B, they never quite completely sold out to what the Rockets are doing now with Mike D'Antoni. I think D'Antoni probably, if he had been left to his own devices, he probably would have gone ahead and asked his team to shoot maybe not as many as they're shooting in Houston, because it was the beginning of that era. But they all feel like they didn't tilt far enough towards just running up and down, shooting as many threes as they possibly could. And I think if Nash played today, I think you're right, he would be probably even a more effective player, because he just would have shot the ball more. And that would have gone along with all the tremendous playmaking that he had. So yeah, Nash is a lot of fun. A guy who I think as a 6'3 white kid, somebody that you could relate to. You could see.
Hey, he is exactly someone I could relate to, Mike.
Right. You watch him play and you're like, you could see where his game, how he developed his game and what it was all about. And so that was something that was fun to watch with Steve Nash.
All right, so your next one.
All right, so I'm going off the board again for this one. And this is a guy, again, going back to when I was a little bit younger. This guy I'm sure you've heard of. He spent a few seasons with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And during the time that he was with the Cleveland Cavaliers, I became a huge fan of this guy, because he was really, I guess, probably the only attraction that the Cavs had during certain seasons. And he clearly was a guy that ended up doing things here for the city of Cleveland and carrying the Cavaliers into the playoffs. And that guy is World B. Free.
I was thinking that. I was going to say it, but I didn't want to say it. I figured that's where you're going.
So World B, the year that the Cavs started the season, I believe they started 2-19, and ended up going and making the playoffs. Now I forget. I want to say that was maybe, that was in the real early 80s. Maybe 80, ooh, I don't know. I forget exactly when that was. I'm looking, maybe 80, 85, 86, maybe somewhere in there. At any rate, World for his career averaged 20 a game. 20 a game for World. He had one season where he averaged 30. That was for the San Diego Clippers, 1979-1980, 30.2. Season before, he had averaged 28.8. When he was with Cleveland, he averaged 24, 22, 22, and 23. Now, World liked to shoot, man. That guy loved to shoot.
I know why they called him World, by the way. I don't think he wanted to be called Lloyd.
Yeah, he did not want to be called Lloyd anymore, so he changed his name legally. He was one of the first name changers that I can ever remember. Changed his name to World. And the thing that I remember the most about World is imitating his shot, because he had this funky shot where he pulled the ball back behind his head and he would elevate super high on his jump shot. He wasn't a tall guy. He's probably like 6'2", maybe, maybe not even that tall. And he would just, he could get his shot off against anybody because he cranked it way back behind his head. And he was one of those guys that in the era when I was a kid, he was fun to imitate the way he played and the way he shot the ball because he was just so unique. And during those early 80s years with the Cavs, that was just a time where it was kind of, Cleveland was kind of an NBA wasteland. And so when World got here, he was just fun to watch. And he was a guy that chucked shots up, and he was a guy who was exciting to watch. He had a personality. And so I just remember from that particular era of Cleveland Cavaliers basketball, World Be Free was my guy to watch.
Okay. My next one, and I want to be clear, it was not something that I tuned into when at this point in his career for the Roy Nash game, but Shaquille O'Neal, Mike. I just loved watching him play basketball just because he just played big-time bully ball. And I would always remember, like, imitating, like you were talking about imitating World Be Free. When I play basketball with my good friend Steve Frame, we would basically just run into each other and say, we're going to do what Shaq does and back each other down. And I just remember imitating him. And I wasn't necessarily as girthy or as much as Shaq did. And obviously I couldn't dunk and break a backboard, but I just always felt, especially early in his career and into his prime, like he would always do something crazy in a game. And I just enjoyed watching him play basketball.
Yeah, I wouldn't have Shaq ranked that high. LSU Shaq was fun. You watch the LSU Shaq highlights when he was slimmer and he was more athletic and running up and down the floor. That Shaq was fun. I didn't enjoy the peak era Lakers Shaq nearly as much just because he was just so big and so powerful and so hard to officiate and so dominant. And that's not to take anything away from him. He was a great player, but I didn't necessarily enjoy the Shaq Lakers experience all that much. Not that I didn't like watching him, but he wouldn't be high on the list of guys that I was like, oh, I got to tune in for Shaq. He just wasn't that high on my list, but okay. I get it. So you prefer Shaq over Kobe, or Kobe's going to be next on your list?
I never really liked, not to disparage him, but I never really said, okay, I'm going to turn the game on because it's Kobe, except for his last game. I did watch his last game, but I never throughout his career, I didn't be like, oh, I want to watch Kobe. And I retrospectively look back at that and say, I don't know why, but I never would be like, okay, Kobe's playing, I'm going to turn the game on.
All right. That's fair.
I don't have a reason as to why that is. I never was a huge Kobe guy. I think we talked about this when we talked about him. Like, I never was a huge fan of his, and that maybe it's because I've always been a LeBron guy, but like, and I know that there was some years that Kobe was in the league that LeBron wasn't, but at that point in my life, I wasn't as huge into the NBA as I am now. So,
all right, that's fair. Okay. So I'm going to continue with my theme of going off the board, and I'm probably going to go off the board here. I'm hoping you've heard of at least one of these two guys. I'm hoping you've heard of at least one of the two of them.
Okay.
And to be honest, both of these guys, I probably enjoyed them beginning with their college careers. And one, I remember watching a lot of him play in college. The other one, I don't know if I watched him play at all in college, but there used to be this game that I would play. And again, here I'm dating myself. There was a game on the Commodore 64, an ancient computer, that when I was a kid, there was a game that I forget the college season, but it had all the statistics from that particular college season loaded into this game. And it was basically text, and you would hit this button, and then it would tell you what the next play was. And you could determine like who you wanted to get the ball or who you wanted to shoot. And then based on their statistics, it would.
ESPN should air this kind of tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. No one would want to watch this for even 2 seconds. But the two most dominant players in college basketball during that year were Wayman Tisdale. Do you remember Wayman Tisdale?
No.
Okay. So Wayman Tisdale played at Oklahoma. He was drafted by the Indiana Pacers, had a decent pro career, but in college, he was a lefty guy who played in the post, was just dominant. in college. Great, great player in college. I watched a lot of him during the time when I was a college basketball fan. And then okay. I continued to be a fan of his.
He's
in the
a
pros.
Smooth jazz bass guitarist now, Mike.
He was, right. Well, he passed away.
A number of
years ago. But yeah, he was a jazz musician. Actually, released several albums, and I think was thought of pretty highly in the music world, not just as an athlete playing music, but honestly as a really talented musician. But I just remember him as a lefty post player who could score on anybody, and then. To go along with that, this is a guy who was on that same game when he played at Wichita State, Xavier McDaniel, who ended up kind of being a tough guy in the NBA.
Don't know that guy either.
You gotta be watching those games on NBA TV if you don't know the X-Man. So X-Man kind of had the reputation of being a tough guy. You can find a picture of him choking Wesley Matthews Sr. You could probably search it up right now and find Xavier McDaniel choking Wes Matthews and find that photo. But anyway, Xavier McDaniel was part of those Knicks teams at one time that battled with some of the Jordan Bulls and the Heat. And he was just a guy that was rough and tumble. But in college, I believe he led the nation in scoring and rebounding that season. And so he was just a guy that you could give the ball to. And he was a lot of fun to watch as a young player. And he was just a guy that would get up in people's jerseys and get after it and was kind of a tough guy. And in that era, he was somebody that I like to watch. Those are, again, two more kind of off the board.
I found Xavier McDaniel choking Juwan Howard.
Okay, well.
Washington Bullet.
He's choked a couple different.
Wes Matthews Sr. Yeah, he's feisty. I like it.
Xavier McDaniel was feisty. So it's a combo. It's a combo for me at number three. Wayman Tisdale and Xavier McDaniel.
Okay. So does that mean you only have one more left, Mike?
No, I have more. We could keep going forever. So I got as many as you need.
Well, I got two more left. And
all right, okay. I got three. I got three. I'm gonna throw out there.
All right. Well, my two are probably. I don't think they're that. I mean, they're. It's Jordan and
yeah,
LeBron.
I don't have LeBron on my list, not because I don't enjoy watching LeBron, just because I tried to go back a little bit more in time. Jordan clearly is on there as the number one guy that you'd like to watch. From on so many levels, just from a competitiveness standpoint, from a will to dominate, from an athleticism standpoint, the things that he was able to do, if you go back and you watch a reel of Jordan highlights, they're just incredible, which, again, goes back to our earlier conversation about the documentary. I can't wait to see.
And we could beat that with a dead horse, and I feel like we're going to talk about Jordan a lot. So I had Jordan and LeBron was my top two, and I kind of had them as 1A, 1B. Just because I think, obviously, I feel spoiled because, like, my getting into NBA basketball, like, I watched it in the 90s, and I watched it, but it wasn't as accessible as it was, like, obviously, in the mid-2000s, and obviously, the Cavs got good. I'm not saying that was the only reason that I got into the NBA, but, you know, it doesn't hurt, right? I mean, to be honest, it doesn't hurt. So, I just have always enjoyed watching him play, and even this year, like, I feel like last year I wasn't as enjoying him as much to play basketball. And, you know, even when he played for the Heat, I wasn't very happy that he went to Miami. But at the same time, I just remember tuning into any game that I could watch. And I watched every finals game. And I might have rooted against him that first year. And Cavs for Mavs fans and all that stuff that was going on. And we'll talk about our top five sporting, you know, going to things in a little bit here, and I'll reference something in regards to that. But I just definitely think, you know, I just enjoyed watching him play, and obviously Jordan. I don't think we need to talk about Jordan and why I enjoyed watching him play. I think it's pretty evident, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. And LeBron is clearly a no-brainer. If you love basketball and you love somebody who thinks the game and understands the game, then you appreciate what LeBron's done. If you look at the totality of his career, there's some weird things that have gone on in his career. You think about the last game in a Cavs uniform against the Celtics before he left. You think about sort of his meltdown against the Mavericks in that first finals. And in a way, it makes him more human, whereas Jordan just seemed like this indomitable machine that
robot
just couldn't. Yeah, that just couldn't. I mean, just couldn't be stopped. I mean, there was nothing, which is why I'll always continue to make the argument that if I'm picking the best player of all time, I'm picking Jordan over LeBron. LeBron has those warts on his resume, whether you like it or not, and Jordan simply doesn't have those same warts on his resume. And so for me, it'll always be Jordan, and I'll argue that until the cows come home. So yeah, Jordan's got to be clearly number one. I have three more guys left on my list. And again, I tried to go back in time to when I was a kid and think about the guys that I loved to watch. Jordan was one of them. Then the other two guys that were on the list were Magic. Magic was just so much fun to watch pass the ball. I think
I never got to watch him play, Mike, be honest.
Yeah, Magic was the first guy that made me fall in love with passing as a skill. And clearly he was, at that time, sort of linked in history with Larry Bird. I, as a kid, always was a Magic guy, hated the Celtics, hated Larry Bird when I was a kid, and just always, for whatever reason, gravitated towards Magic. And he was just so much fun to watch because you never knew where he was going to pass the ball from, how he was going to get the ball to guys. He was the king of the no-look pass. The Lakers played a fun style, running up and down the floor and Showtime and all that. And so Magic always seemed to be having fun when he was playing the game, smiles on his face all the time. And I was a Lakers fan when the Lakers had Magic and Kareem and Worthy and Byron Scott and A.C. Green and Michael Cooper and Michael Thompson and that whole group back in the Showtime 80s Lakers when Riley was running the show. And so Magic's definitely got to be on this list for me. And then the last guy, and again, I'm not putting these in any order, but the last guy, when I think about who I like to watch during the era when I was growing up in the NBA, Dominique Wilkins has to be on there. I think if you go back, and just like I talked about Jordan's highlights, if you just watch a highlight reel of Dominique Wilkins in-game dunks, I don't know that there's ever been a guy who more powerfully dunked over the top of people than Dominique Wilkins. I mean, he had to have some of the biggest facials ever served up in the NBA. Two-handed off 2 feet. Just the guy was all power. He was so athletic. And he's a guy who I think history has kind of forgotten about in some ways because he's in that group of players that never won a title. And he just was never able to get through, whether it was the Celtics, whether it was the Sixers, the Pistons, Jordan's Bulls. He was never able to get over the hump and kind of find enough help around him to be able to get his way into the NBA Finals. His duel with Larry Bird, I think it was game 6, I forget what season, but the two, or maybe it was even game 7. The two of them just went back and forth in the fourth quarter, and I think Bird ended up scoring in the 40s and Dominique might have had in the 50s. And it was just an incredible, incredible performance. It's probably the only game that I can equate it to was there was a regular season game, I think, with LeBron and Dwayne Wade, where the two of them kind of went back and forth, and they each had in the 40s or 50s, and it seemed like in crucial moments they were just going back and forth, trading basket for basket. And Dominique and Bird did the same thing. It was just kind of an epic game, and if you get a chance to search that. In fact, I'm going to do it right now and figure out what year that was that duel happened. But those two guys were just amazing, and I just think it was crazy how good he was. And Dominique's in-game dunking was the equal of anybody I've ever seen. I don't think there's ever been a better dunker in game than Dominique. So this was, their shootout was May 22nd, 1988. So that would have been my senior year of high school. Game 7, Eastern Conference semifinal. And the Celtics won 118-116. And I'm trying to see how many points each of them had.
What year was this?
This was 87-88.
Oh, I was alive then.
You were alive. Good work, man. Nice job. So in that game, let's see. Wilkins ended up with 47. And how many did Bird end up with? Bird finished 34. Bird had 20 in the fourth quarter. Dominique was 19 of 23 from the floor in that game. So it was just one of those games that I remember watching it live, and both of those guys were just going at it. So Neek is, like I said, kind of lost to history because he never won a title. And really, that was probably his biggest and best playoff moment. It came in a loss, but he was just awesome to watch.
Head Start Basketball, along with members of the Jay Billis Skills Camp staff, will be hosting the very first Prime Skills Camp, an affiliate of the Jay Billis Skills Camp that is held annually in Charlotte, North Carolina. Prime Skills Camp will take place on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, June 26th through the 28th, and will be designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9. Prime Skills Camp will mirror the Jay Billis Skills Camp in daily programming, teaching, coach-to-camper ratio, and quality of instruction. Prime Skills Camp brings all of the team-oriented individual instruction, focus on the fundamentals, and high-level coaching to young men aspiring to a high school varsity basketball experience. This camp is operated by Billis Camp veterans and includes the Jay Billis Coaches Development Program alongside the camp, ensuring that the quality of teaching and coaching at this camp is second to none. Please visit headstartbasketball.com or jbilliscamp.com for more information or to get registered.
Here's my thought, Mike. We're at 52 minutes. Do you want to do the other one, or do you want to save it for next week?
I'm okay to do it. I only have two. I don't know how much you want to talk about what you have to talk about. So we can save it, or we can do it quick. I don't have a whole lot on this. Oh, actually, okay. I guess I have three.
Okay. So here's what I have. All right. I just went with the top five sporting events. So it's not all basketball, Mike.
Mine are not all basketball either. So.
Okay. So number five, and this is going to seem out of left field a little bit. Okay.
Okay.
The Thursday night football Baker Mayfield debut. I was at that game.
That's the Jets?
The Jets. The Browns are just starving at this point, and everyone wanted Baker to play, and Hugh Jackson's an idiot, so they didn't play him. And then he gets in the game, and they came back and won, and then he hasn't relinquished the job yet since then. So, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with the Browns. But that was just, it was exciting. I also helped that I had J.R. Smith, shirtless J.R. Smith in the loge next to me. So they did well. And when they started to do well and Baker came in the game, he took his shirt off, threw it into the stands in front of him. So it was just very memorable to me, was being there for that.
Okay, I'll say this. I was not at that game, but the excitement that came through the TV screen on that game, I will never forget the feeling of, oh man, this guy really has it. Like, here goes what's going to be a great era of Browns football, in theory. But it came through the TV that night. His charisma and the electricity in the stands, you could feel that through the TV. So I could imagine being there, what that felt like. So that's a good one.
All right. So I'll do another one too, just because you only have three. Does that sound good?
Just roll through them all.
My number four is the last Browns game at the old stadium. I was there. And it's more memorable to me because I went, it was like the only sporting event that I can vividly remember going with my grandpa, and it was the Browns. I think the Chiefs were who they were playing, and I just remember going with my grandpa and my mom and my grandma and my sister, which was crazy that we were going to this game, and why we went to the last game, I don't know, but I couldn't go with my dad because he had season tickets, so I went with them, and just to see the last game in the stadium, it was just kind of surreal, and just I remember going with my grandpa. So that's really why I remember it, not necessarily for anything that happened. I do remember the people ripping the chairs and stuff and throwing them onto the field, but that's why. My number three was I was at the LeBron return game. I went to the first game when he came back.
Can I say something about that? Can I say something about that first?
Yeah, go ahead.
So what I remember about that is the Nike commercial.
Yeah.
Leading into that game. Like, I watched that, and that thing fired me up to no end. Like, I was so pumped after watching that commercial that I wanted to get out on the court and play myself. And there's very few things that inspire that kind of feeling in me, and that was definitely one of them. Where I watched it, I'm like, God, I want to get out
on the
court.
And then they lost the Knicks, which was sad. But
And then they lost. But wait, I got it. Before you say that, come on. I got it. You got to let me finish. So all I can say is, and this is another Jordan versus LeBron debate, and this is a stupid reason, but Jordan does not lose that game.
I agree.
Not in a million years does Jordan lose that game, his first game back. I don't care what he has to do, play 1-on-5, shoot 400 times, never take a shot, tackle people before they try to score. There's no humanly possible way that Jordan loses that game. He just doesn't.
Okay. My number two was the 2016 NBA Finals Game 6. I was at the game when they just went nuts. And it was a great game. Cavs pulled it out, and obviously we know how it ended. So I went with that for my number two.
How loud was it there?
I'll be honest with you. I remember walking out of the stadium, okay? Walking out of the stadium and being so – it was louder walking out in the halls, you know, like when people are going down the stairs or going up and down the stairs. I remember being louder walking out of the building than it was even – like when the game's going on, and I think obviously there's a lot more space. It was just so loud. And I got back to my car, and my dad, who's at this point in his life, you know, it's 4 years later, his hearing's pretty shot. Okay. Love you, Dad, but it's true. And I really believe that that game was the start of it. Because we were in the car, and I'm having a whole conversation with him. And then after he goes, "What'd you just say?" Like, I literally talked for 2 minutes. "What did you just say? Did you say something?" And I was like, "Okay, it was really loud there." So, yes. And then my number one isn't the happiest memory, Mike. I was at World Series Game 7 in 2016. And I just think that that game altogether is probably the greatest game of baseball / any sport that I could ever witness. When Rajay Davis hit that home run, I was there with Berkey because he had season tickets and had tickets to the game and asked if I would like to buy it from him. Really nice guy. He didn't charge me above face value, even better. So World Series Game 7, I know it didn't go our way, but I can't imagine ever topping that moment at this lifetime just because it was the greatest game of highs and lows. And you know, I know, like I said, it didn't go our way, but I couldn't ask for a better game to be sitting at and watching.
All right, that game was on my list too. And I have a story that surrounds that. So I was sitting at home. I think the game was, I forget what time it started. It was probably an 8:05 first pitch. And I was sitting at home at about 7:15 and eating dinner with the family. And we had all kind of set up to watch the game. Kids had made signs and we were going to watch the baseball game, even though we're not necessarily a baseball family, but we were going to watch the game. And I get a call from Greg Derbyshire from Pro Camps, who was my teammate for a year and a half at Kent, and that we had reconnected recently. And Greg calls me and he says, "Hey man, I got a crappy single ticket for the game tonight." I said, "Oh, that's great, man." I go, "At least you're in the building, man. It's going to be awesome." And he's like, "No, I got one for you." And I'm like, "Well, what do you mean?" He's like, "Yeah, I got an extra ticket." And I said, "Oh, I don't think I, you know, my family's all set up to go, and you know, we're gonna watch the game here on TV. I don't think I can go. And so I hung up with him, and kids are like, "Well, who was that?" I'm like, "Oh, it was, you know, my friend Greg, and he offered me a ticket to the World Series game tonight." And this is, again, keep in mind, this is like 40 minutes before the game's supposed to start. And so they're like, Dad, no, you gotta go." So we all loaded up in the car. Family drove me down to the game, dropped me off on the corner right in front of Progressive Field. I had to fight my way through the little plaza that's in between Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, the queue at the time, and Progressive Field.
You saw the Clydesdales, right? They were there.
I don't remember seeing the Clydesdales because I was just trying to get to the stadium to get the ticket. So I had to get the ticket from Greg, who was already in the game, and back by the center field bleachers, there's like a wrought iron fence that normally you can walk right up to the fence even if you're not in the game. But for the World Series, they had that blocked off like, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 feet. And so I got to the spot where Greg was, but I couldn't reach to get the ticket. And there was all kinds of security that wouldn't let you get close to the fence. And so I kept having to say, hey, that's the guy. That guy's got my ticket right there. And security guard after security guard kept telling me, "No, you can't, you know, you can't get over there to get it." And eventually I found a guy that was willing to let me go and grab the ticket from him. And then I was able to go in. And while I was standing there, that was when Derek Fowler hit that home run in the first inning for the Cubs. Yeah. And so I heard this huge roar go up from the crowd. And I'm like, "Oh man," you know, because I knew the game must have just started. So I figured it was like an inning-ending double play or some fantastic play in the field. And then I go in and I see that the Cubs are winning. I'm like, "What was that big cheer for? Like, that doesn't make any sense." And then, of course, you come to realize once you're in there that it was probably pretty 50-50. Close. Yeah, it was probably pretty close to 50-50. And so that was, in a way, to me, that was disappointing. Like, I did not enjoy that part of the game, the fact that no matter what happened, somebody was cheering. Like, it would have been so much better if it had been all Indians fans, or even if, honestly, if it would have been all Cubs fans, where you could have had the silence when something bad happened and the cheering when something good happened. And to your point about the Raji Davis homer off Aroldis Chapman, that was probably, I think, the loudest building that I've ever been in. And again, that was only 50% of the fans that were cheering. I mean, that was just probably the most incredible.
Can I tell a quick side story on that, Mike?
Sure.
So as I already mentioned, I'm sitting next to Berkey, who I don't remember how much I had to pay for my ticket, but it was somewhere around like $130, $140 for the game, which wasn't ridiculous, okay, because we were behind home plate about five.
Considering what he could have sold it for.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's where I'm going to get to. There were four Cubs fans in front of me, Mike, in front of us, that bought four tickets. For the four tickets, they paid $5,000.
Yeah, I believe it.
So when Rajay Davis hit that home run, them just sitting down and having their heads in their like hands was probably my favorite moment of the game, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but it still would have been great to have it just be all Indians fans. It still would have been great. It was so disconcerting. Like, I've never been to a game where the crowd was so evenly divided. I've never been to a game.
The closest thing would probably be a high school game, right? Like,
yeah, probably.
Probably. I'm not saying obviously not to that level.
Like a packed high school game.
Yeah.
Like a packed high school game. Or I've never been to the Super Bowl, but I would imagine the Super Bowl feels sort of the same way, where you have fans from both sides. I did not enjoy that environment. I did not like it. I would have much preferred one set of fans or the other. I honestly wouldn't have cared if it had been the entire stadium had been filled with Cubs fans, because to me the silence is almost as beautiful as the noise. But yeah, that Davis home run was incredible. That was an incredible moment. So that was definitely on my list.
What other ones are on your list?
All right, so I'll go through my other ones quickly. Another one is another baseball memory. I was at the Indians game, playoff game against the Yankees, when Sandy Alomar hit a home run to win the game. I don't know if it was extra innings or the ninth inning. I can't remember now. But I was out in, I believe he hit it to like left center field, and which is exactly where I was sitting. So the ball actually landed in the section where I was sitting. And I just remember people going crazy. That was in the first iteration of the Indians back when we had been starred for any kind of winning baseball in Cleveland. That was during an era when I was 24, 25, 26, 27. So I was out on the town a lot more than I am in my current life. So after the game, you know, you're going out and just reveling in this, the victory with the rest of the city. So I remember that moment was just super exciting. I don't remember the year exactly. Sometime in the, it might've been, I think that was 97. I think it was the division series. I think it was the 97 division series. Maybe it was the ALCS. I can't remember. But at any rate, the Alomar home run, that was a great moment. My other three are basketball. I was at a game when the Cavs played Portland and Kyrie put up 55 against Lillard and just dominated Damian Lillard. That's as hot as I've ever seen a guy in person shooting the basketball. And I just remember feeling like, oh my God, he's just making Damian Lillard look like he's a college kid. He just dominated him. Probably the best game that I've seen Kyrie play other than those three straight games, game five, game six, game seven in the finals. I don't know that Kyrie's ever been better than he was in that game against Damian Lillard. And then my last two are having an opportunity to watch guys who ended up being NBA players play in high school. And one was Jimmy Jackson. I saw Jimmy Jackson, who played at Ohio State, got drafted by the Mavericks, and had probably what would be considered a disappointing NBA career, considering what he was in college and what people thought he was going to be. I mean, he played a bunch of years in the league, but never really lived up to, I think he averaged 25 a game, maybe in his second year in the league, maybe his third year, but just never really completely put it together, had some injuries and just never really reached his potential. But I saw him play when he was in 10th grade, played against Elyria High School. He played at Toledo McCumber. Elyria High School is a local high school here in Cleveland. Went to the game with my dad and just remember walking in and not knowing at that point there was no internet. And so it's not like you could really necessarily even see who this guy was beforehand. So you're kind of walking in not knowing, you know, we heard about him. That's kind of why we went to the game, but didn't know what he looked like. And so you walk in and the team comes out for warmups. And, you know, before he comes out, you're kind of thinking, well, are we going to be able to figure out who this guy is? And he comes out and he's in 10th grade and he looks like he's a man among boys as a 10th grader. and he just had the same body for anybody who remembers Jimmy Jackson. He was just a physical, strong, thick guy, and he was the same way when he was in 10th grade. And I just remember watching him and going, this guy's playing a completely different game than everybody else. And to be able to see him on a high school court in a normal gym, sitting in the bleachers like four rows away from him, you just were struck by, again, the physicality and size and special tools that a guy like him had. And then the last one for me was getting a chance to see LeBron play in high school. Saw him play when he was a junior down at Cleveland State. And what I remember more than anything about LeBron in that game was just how fast he got up and down the floor. And it just seemed like he'd take three, four steps and he'd be from half court to the baseline or from baseline to the half court. And just like with Jimmy Jackson, he looked like he was completely out of place in that game from just an athleticism, size, skill standpoint. It was just clear. He stood out so much from everybody else. And like I said, the thing I remember more than anything was just the speed that he moved up and down the court. It was just incredible. I'd never seen anybody move in person the way LeBron moved during that game. And obviously he clearly lived up to what everybody thought he was going to be when he was in high school. So those would be my top five.
All right. That was a fun exercise, Mike.
That was fun. It's good to relive some good memories. That's always enjoyable. So, well, we want to thank everybody for sticking with us and tuning in. We're going to continue to do our weekly NBA shows. We'll probably throw in some different topics and things that try to make it interesting so that people will continue to have something to listen to. We want to continue to be able to provide some quality content. Like we said earlier, if you get a chance to leave us a rating and review, we'd like to share your rating and review on the air. If you're interested in doing a podcast, hosting a podcast, have an idea for a podcast, please reach out to us, share that with us. And if you didn't get a chance to watch my virtual coaches clinic that I put on yesterday with CoachTube, please go ahead and check that out. And we'll see you next week and catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Hey, everyone. Last year at the Junior NBA Summit, I came across an amazing company called iSport 360 and its founder, Ian Goldberg. Their youth sports app gets coaches, players, and parents on the same page. Your team can set goals, share player feedback, training videos, sticker rewards, player evals, and practice assignments. All of this to foster a healthy team communication and culture. If your team or club struggles to keep open lines of communication, especially among team parents, iSport 360 can help. If you want to empower your athletes to have more success, more confidence, and more communication with their teammates, give iSport 360 a try today. Shoot me an email, mike@hoopheadspod.com, or give me a call at 216-392-4059 to learn more.
Registration is now open at headstartbasketball.com for this summer's Head Start Basketball Camps. We'll be hosting camps for boys and girls in grades 1 through 6 throughout the greater Cleveland area. Get registered today and make sure you hit the courts with us this summer.
Being without basketball right now is tough for all of us. So we've partnered with ProSkills Basketball to offer you a 50% discount on their Ultimate Shooting Guide and Video Program that will put players on a guided path to becoming the best shooter they can be. With 1 year's worth of workouts that includes games, drills, and competitions, players will gain access to a blueprint showing them what it takes to become an elite level shooter. If you're looking to improve your shooting at home, this program can help. Visit hoopheadspod.com/store to check it out.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.